This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
That's what I always say. You always follow the money.
Yeah.
This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
Pauly and Mark Melusis, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Durbin Grand Slam for the Red Sox. 5-0 now in the top of the eighth, trying to avoid the sweep in Toronto. Jets take on the Buccaneers tomorrow. They're up to 6-point favorites, 35.5 the total. For more on that game and the season outlook and camp, we talked to Dan Leberfeld now, friend of the show, Jet Whispers on X. He's on the Progressive guest line, kind enough to take a few moments out of his day to talk little Jets with us as well. Thanks for the time, my friend. How is camp going so far?
Good. You know, it's a camp where this time of year everyone has a glass half full, right? And the Jets have a lot of hope. And I think the thing that gives them hope is Frank Reich's arrival. You talk about free agents, you talk about draft picks. They had a lot of high draft picks. But the arrival of Frank Reich as offensive coordinator has really changed the vibe, not just because he's an accomplished offensive play caller who'll do a better job on that side of the ball than they've seen in a number of years, but also because I think he'll be a really good bench coach for Aaron Glenn, who struggled in his first year as an NFL head coach. Mm-hmm. And Frank, three-time head coach with the Carolina Panthers, Colts, and, of course, the Stanford Cardinal last year. So he's a guy not only can help their offense, but can help Aaron Glenn take that next step as a head coach, as almost like a bench coach in baseball.
How significant, Dan, and good to chat with you, and hopefully you're enjoying training camp. How significant an upgrade is it with Geno Smith at quarterback now for the Jets?
Well, I'll tell you what. When you look at the situation where unless you have a Patrick Mahomes or a Joe Burrow or a Josh Allen, that upper echelon of quarterbacks that are getting 55 to 60 million, once you get past that tier, I've always believed so many teams waste money on that middle tier or very good quarterback. You know, I watched Baker Mayfield the last couple of days with the Buccaneers as the Jets and Bucks had joint practices, and he's very good, don't get me wrong. But I'm not sure if I want to pay him 50, 55 million a year. He went 8-9 last year. Mm-hmm. And you look at Geno's record, the 3 years in Seattle with a stable team, and the record of Baker Mayfield the last 3 years with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, almost identical. And I'll give Geno a pass last year in Las Vegas. I mean, you guys are based in Vegas. I know, Mark, you're working with them, but all the other guys out of the East Coast, but the guys in Vegas saw firsthand last year, Mark, you're aware of it, how bad that offensive line was, how devoid they were of weapons. So I'm going to give Geno a pass for last year. I'm going to go by his Seattle work, and the Seattle work was pretty good with 9-8, 10-7 type records. Jets would sign up for that in a heartbeat.
Oh, you're being very kind. I mean, he led the league in interceptions. He was atrocious.
That line was so bad, you know, with Colton Miller out and all the other injuries. I think that as far as Geno, I don't know if there was a worse offensive line in football. And I'm not saying Geno's great, don't get me wrong. But, man, was that line bad.
What do you think of the weapons that he has to work with and what they did in the draft?
Well, I think the weapons are very good. I don't know what's going on with Kenyon Sadiq, the 16th pick of the first round. Mm-hmm. They drafted him with a sports hernia. He goes into the rookie mini camp. He didn't have surgery at Oregon. He doesn't feel right in the rookie camp. He gets surgery. He comes back at the beginning of camp. It's not feeling right. He's on the sideline again. So I don't know where you're going to see him, but they're pretty deep at tight end. Mason Taylor, the second-year player at LSU, is having a very good camp at the tight end position. Obviously, they're pretty loaded at receiver now, getting a lot of help for Garrett Wilson. Adonai Mitchell should be a very good complement, the former Colt. And obviously, Omar Cooper in the draft looks like a good slot receiver. Isaiah Williams, the team MVP last year, which is kind of an indictment as far as the team, is when the kick returner is their MVP. But that's another story. He looks really good in camp. The line is very good with the bookend tackles both picked in the first round. I think that they have plenty of weapons, and Breece Hall at running back is pretty good. So weapons won't be a problem. I don't think the line will be a problem. And I think Geno can manage the game. I don't want you guys to think I'm overrating him. I'm talking about 9-8 as the best record possible for them. And I think with Geno at quarterback, if you protect him and you sell the running game with the play action, I think he can be serviceable.
Wow.
Yeah, and Breece Hall with that 3-year contract. Defensively here, Dan, how has Bailey looked? I know he got tweaked up a little bit, but how is the second overall pick looked? And if calling plays is Aaron Glenn's superpower, which he's going to be doing this year, why exactly didn't he call plays last year after they fired the DC?
Nope. I think we lost Dan. I am surprised. I am shocked. He is usually gloomy Gus. And he said best case scenario, but he's thinking maybe 8-9 wins, and the win total is 5.5.
Yeah, Dan is a little positive here. Good vibes, you know. Wow. Paulie, we talked about it. There are positive vibes. I took the over of the 5.5 for the Jets. I don't think they're going to be a playoff team. I don't think they're going to win 9 games. I do agree. I'll disagree with you, Paul. I do agree with Danny, and he's back with us. As far as Geno Smith, he's going to be decidedly better than what they had a year ago. Dan, how about the defense here? How has Bailey looked, and how about Aaron Glenn calling plays defensively?
Yeah, I mean, with Aaron Glenn calling plays defensively, I don't think he was a great defensive coordinator in Detroit. He was okay. The last time we saw him there was at Washington playoff game where they didn't play very good defense and he didn't make very good adjustments. So I think he's a good, not great defensive coordinator. He'll work with Brian Duker, who's got the title, who worked with him in Detroit. So he'll kind of be co-defensive coordinator. I think it'll be better than last year where Steve Wilks was not a good hire. And also Aaron Glenn farming out the defense last year was weird when he made his bones on defense. And then you hire a defensive coordinator you never worked with who plays a different system. That was weird. So I think the owner said, you call the defense. So they'll do that. They have so much better depth than last year on defense. They did not, you know, when you play D-line in the NFL, as you guys know, you rotate a lot. When they rotated to the backups, it was a disaster. They had no depth. So I think the D-line rotation will be a lot better with their additions, and I think the secondary is a lot deeper. I think linebacker is still a little bit of a problem after Demario Davis. They have a lot of question marks. But I think when you look at the first-round pick, number 2 overall, I think that when you look at what's going on there, I think the media's gone a little overboard with the praise as far as the first-round pick, but I think he'll be a solid edge rusher. But remember, at Texas Tech last year, every single player on that D-line was drafted. And let's not forget, that program has a lot of money to spend, the Red Raiders. So they went out and bought a D-line. So he had a lot of help there. We'll see what he can do, being more of a focal point on the Jets' D-line. But I think that I don't think he'll be a bust, but I don't know if he'll live up to the hype he's getting right now.
6-point favorites tomorrow against Tampa. What's the game plan with what they're going to do with quarterback rotation and how Glenn's treating this game?
Yeah, well, I think one thing to consider about this game in terms of Tampa Bay is the other day in practice, they lost their backup quarterback. Obviously, Baker Mayfield wasn't going to play, but they lost Jake Browning to an injury in the practice. So I think they might be down to their third string quarterback. We saw a lot of Jalen Daniels, and the former Bowling Green quarterback was out there as well. So I don't know what they're going to do at quarterback when you look at Tampa Bay Bucs. As far as the Jets, Kay Klubnik, I'll say this about him. I don't know how good he's going to be in the long term, but he's certainly a very good preseason quarterback because he's got a good arm. He's got good wheels. He likes to run around. As far as regular season, I don't know if he has to play. I wouldn't put him in the backup role in the regular season, being one snap away, because one thing I've seen that's a problem with him is he's a one read and run quarterback. As far as he's not going through his progressions very well, if the first read's not open in practice, he starts running to the right and is playing street yard ball. And I say that related to the preseason, as you guys go, that might not be bad in the preseason. So if you're looking at it from a preseason game, he might be okay in the preseason, but I don't know if that's going to work in the regular season if he has to play. If I were the Jets, I'd go out and get a veteran backup. but I think he could be okay running around in the preseason.
Dan, I have one last one for you. You mentioned, how's the Reich-Glenn relationship? Because there's a lot of Jet fans that believe that maybe Frank Reich, if it goes poorly this year, is the head coach in waiting.
Yeah, I think the relationship is fine. Frank is a good, very good person, a very devout religious person. And I don't think that he came in thinking, you know what, this coach is on the hot seat. If they get off to a 1-4 start or an 0-5 start, I could be a head coach again. I don't think that's Frank's motives. It was a risky hire from the standpoint of, yeah, they have a guy there if they decide to make a move in season who's a three-time head coach and would be a good interim coach and maybe beyond, you know, maybe a coach, you know, for a few years. But I don't think that was Frank's motive. The relationship seems to be fine. I don't see Frank as a kind of guy that's gunning for the position, but it might happen organically, you know, if the Jets get off to a bad start as far as Reich being a potential replacement.
Thanks for the time, my man. Always good to catch up with you, and enjoy the game tomorrow. Thank you.
Anytime, guys. Have a good one.
All right. Eye on the Jets. Very surprised. All right.
Yeah. Like, a lot of positivity.
No kidding. And when they win total of 5.5, watch out. It's a lot of praise for Geno Smith, who's the favorite to lead the league in interceptions after what he did last year as well. We'll go through some of the NFL preseason games coming up next, but also we touched on this. A lot of fans are excited, thinking, hey, maybe we could be next. The Lakers went for $12.5 billion. Are other owners looking around saying, I got to sell now while the going's getting good here? We'll talk about that next on Follow the Money. Six preseason games. We'll run them down again a couple times on the show. We've been line movement. The disparity with the game in the first half is something. We'll kick that around a lot coming up on the program. Also, Lou Finocchiaro to talk UFC 330 in 15 minutes. The bombshell yesterday that for the second time in a year, the Lakers were sold. $12.5 billion. Bob Iger said, it took about 3 days to put the whole thing on. How does that happen? And who, maybe it was Adam Silver. I don't know. That's speculation. But who the hell reached out to Iger and said, wink, wink, maybe Walter wants to sign the Lakers in light of what's going on in his personal life, in his situation. So this is also bizarre that Luka has now had 5 different owners in the last 3 years of his NBA career in Dallas and with the Lakers. And to think Walter, again, treated one of the top franchises in all of sports like a rental in Southern California, summer rental, how we just flipped it for $2.5 billion. But it got me thinking, and other people and other fans are excited about now the what. If you're looking at this now, and these crazy amounts of money, what these sports teams are going for, the first thing that came to my mind was Reinsdorf. Like, can he sell the Bulls? Would he move on from the White Sox? Because you're talking about billions of dollars. If the Portland Trail Blazers are going for $4 billion. Bulls, White Sox, would Dolan do the unthinkable? A lot of fans around the world are excited about if this can happen and saying, we just got to cash out here because the money's so good that this could open the door to a different owner or ownership and to get rid of the guy maybe they don't like.
Yeah, listen, it's good to own a team. I was, when you were going through that, think about this, Paulie, for a second. Do you remember what Steinbrenner paid for the Yankees from CBS in 1973?
Oh, no. $20 million.
I'm throwing you on this. $10
million. Oh, my God.
And the team's worth probably north of $11, $12 billion right now. That's 1973. Now you think to yourself, that's, you know, I mean, probably higher, right? Given the fact that you just saw the Lakers get sold for $12.5 billion. Yeah, I mean, the value, I agree with you. I mean, then you saw it a year ago with the Giants. I think they sold 10% off their share, 10% of their share of their teams when you look at the Maras and the Tishes. And the Mariners still have controlling interest of the New York Giants, and they sold it for $1 billion. So they're looking at a valuation of of $10 billion. The Giants haven't won a Super Bowl since 2011. It's good to the amount of money. I think that the two leagues you want to get a part of, if obviously the NBA and you look at the National Football League, because you're printing money due to the TV deals and the network deals and the amount of money that they're generating from that, you have constant flow of money coming in. Roger Goodell has been great as the NFL commissioner in terms of printing money for the owners, but it's remarkable when you look at it. And I think there are going to be more guys looking at this ownership or looking at this sale of the Los Angeles Lakers and say to themselves, well, maybe now's the time to get out because the going's pretty good.
Oh, yeah. No kidding. And let's two things here. Number one, Jeannie Buss didn't shop the Lakers. So she just went to Walter and they worked out that deal. And then she tells her five brothers and sisters, okay, you know, it was $600 million each, how it worked out. So you could actually come back and argue that Walter got it for a steal because she didn't shop it. And then you come back a year later, and now it's $12.5 billion. The other thing was this astronomical number they want for the team out here. If Las Vegas gets an expansion team, they want $7 to $10 billion for that. But you also could do what Mark Davis has done and what the Giants just did, which wet your beak. And take some money off the table. I mean, just think, what kind of a world are we living in? We'll say, you know what, let's try to scoop a billion here. Let's sell 10% of the team and pocket a quick billion. It's bananas.
That is a great line, by the way. That's like a Steve Cohen special. He used to say that all the time at WFAN. I want to get my beak wet all the time. So I love that when you threw that out there, Paulie. But, yeah, you're not wrong. It's almost like, you know, Jeannie Buss, because – you know, Harrison down there in Dallas didn't shop Luka around and basically trade him for a chump change to Los Angeles Lakers. Jeannie Buss didn't shop the Lakers around. And a year later, the guy that bought him for $10 billion is making $2.5 billion. And we think the housing market has exploded across the United States, especially in the Northeast. Mm-hmm. Like, look at that. Like, that is insane. Like, he didn't sell it for 10.2 or 10.3. He made $2.5 billion in a calendar year. Now, you hinted upon, Paulie, maybe, you know, the feet were hot. Maybe this was a quick case where the deal came down and was put together in the span of 72 hours. That's it, where everything that he is going through, when you're looking at Walter, that he needed to unload the Los Angeles Lakers. But still, from that point in time, you look at the new ownership group, they spent $2.5 billion more than he bought them for, which is remarkable.
What if something happens to Jerry Jones? Could the family just say, okay, give me $20 billion, we'll sell the Cowboys?
No, I think it's good to be an owner. Like, I don't think Jones's kids would all of a sudden pair the Dallas Cowboys off. I think Stephen Jones would like to run the Dallas Cowboys, and they've got so much money. It's unbelievable. Like, I was telling you, like, I was at the, I think they call it the Commissioner's Ball before a Super Bowl a number of years ago. I think it was down in Jacksonville. And I was walking in and Jerry Jones was in front of me. He had this diamond encrusted Cowboys pendant that was probably worth more than my life that was on his lapel.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a thing of beauty. Like, I mean, it was unbelievable. But, you know, you're Jerry Jones. I mean, that's it. So, no, I think the Jones, you know, I think his kids will run the Dallas Cowboys as they see fit. But when it's time to get out, it's time to get out. But if they decide to sell, I mean, you imagine what the Dallas Cowboys would own. Like, I asked you the question, which team would you rather own right now? Mm-hmm. Cowboys, regardless of whether you're a Dallas fan or not, the Cowboys have got to be up on your list because everybody and their mother know who the Dallas Cowboys are.
Well, it also goes back to what you said earlier about Steinbrenner and going back to maybe people just say, well, I'm getting up there in age and I want. Think about what these guys bought in for. Like, even Golden State and Lakeup, I think he bought the Warriors for $400 million. He could sell them for 12 now, or $13 billion, what he could get. All right, Mr. New York, would it happen with the Yankees, or would Dolan consider selling the Knicks ever?
No, I don't think Dolan, especially coming off a championship, I don't think Dolan would ever sell the Knicks. And they just announced it, I think it was about like 5-6 weeks ago, that James Dolan's son is now going to be running the Rangers. So the Dolans are entrenched. They're not going anywhere. Now, if you're James Dolan, I mean, you were arch enemy number one for all the Knicks' failures, the embarrassment. They just won an NBA title for the first time in 53 years. James Dolan's not going anywhere. He's got the right guy running the New York Knicks, so I don't think he's selling them. And honestly, I don't think Hal Steinbrenner is selling the Yankees. Think about this for a second. Like, the Yankees haven't won a World Series since 2009.
Unacceptable.
So that's 17 years.
Unacceptable.
Unacceptable. Right. Do you know how much revenue? I'm not talking about profit. how much revenue the Yankees have generated in the last 17 years. I looked it up.
Okay.
Over $9 billion of revenue.
Oh, my God.
They've generated in 17 years. Think about that. They made, Paulie, they made over 750, they had over $753 million of revenue a year ago that came into the team. Now, I'm not counting, there's expenditures, right? There's stuff that goes out. That's not all profit. I understand that, but it's good to be the managing general partner of the New York Yankees. You are printing money year in and year out.
You know, also talking about wetting your beak, Mark Davis has done that too with the Raiders and selling off pieces and shares also. But just this will never happen again where a sports franchise set a record and they were sold twice, back-to-back records and sold twice in a year. And the guy who sold it in 10 months made $2.5 billion. And the Boston Celtics, one of the best organizations in the history of sports, storied franchise, they went for $6 billion last year. And now the Lakers, a year later, go for $12.5 billion. I mean, it's staggering. It's insanity what's going on.
Paul, I'll be honest with you. I'd rather own the Celtics than the Lakers. Not that, like, I'm a Boston fan or a Laker fan, but I'd rather own the Celtics. Like, in that city and what the Boston Celtics mean, the history. Lakers got a great history as well, but I'd rather own the Celtics at $6 billion than the Lakers at $12.5 billion.
They're great sports fans, no doubt about it. And we saw that firsthand when we went to Foxwoods. Like, 4 days' notice, some meet and greet, and 200 people showed up. Driving for an hour and a half everywhere, bad weather. They are animals in a good way. We love them, and they watch on Nesson as well. Phenomenal sports fans. They are excellent. 7-0 Red Sox, by the way, in the top of the ninth, and now a possible bad beat alert with the total, as this was 1-0 in the eighth, and now it's 7-0 and 5-0 Nats in the bottom of the fifth against the Cubbies. And Detroit already shut out Cleveland 3-0. Pittsburgh pounded Miami 13-1. Reds beat the White Sox 9-8. Seattle shut out the Yankees 1-0. We got the third Field of Dreams game on Netflix at 4:30 Pacific. More on that coming up. Lou Finocchiaro coming up next. UFC 330 with a ton of picks that we'll get to. Are you a big UFC guy, Moose? Do you watch it?
No. Lou's great. I'll watch it. I'm not a huge UFC guy. You, Paulie?
Casual. Less is more. Yeah. I don't know why they do cards every week. I think it takes away from it, but it certainly helps that they're on Paramount now. And he's got a ton of picks coming up next. And you know what Lou likes to do? Getting creative with some parlays. Doesn't like to lay the heavy chalk. And also loves to give out dogs. And he's got a plus 280 that he likes in one of the fights coming up with UFC 330. That's straight ahead on Follow the Money, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, Sirius XM Channel 158, live downtown from Circa, Paulie and the Moose. Red Sox about to finish off Toronto, 7-0, bottom of the ninth, two outs, and avoid the sweep. It's been too long. We get to visit with Lou Finocchiaro at GamLou on X. Read his write-ups, does a phenomenal job at VSiN.com, the Bout Business podcast. He's on the Progressive guest line as well to break down UFC 330 from Philly tomorrow. And an unbelievable tease from Uncle Lou, one of his best bets he's seen in the last 3 years, which he'll give out at the end of this segment. Good to catch up with you again, my friend. Let's start with Gore, a small favorite in this fight. What do you think of Gore and why he's going to get it done to start the card?
Trayshawn Gore is a young, fast, highly volatile, explosive, powerful fighter. IQ is not a strong point. And he's fighting a guy that's got tremendous amount of fights under his belt in Vicente Luque, who traditionally was a 170-pound fighter, and he's running out of steam now as he's 34, 35 years old, but his body's wearing more of those years because of the attrition he's been through. Anyway, he's now stepped up to 85. Luque, speed, quickness, and now the ability to eat a punch has never been his strong suit. It was when he was young. It isn't any longer. This is a bad matchup for him. He'll be the smarter man and the more experienced man. But as long as Gore listens to his corners, I think he's going to be the faster, more explosive man and stands to do well in this fight. You can see Gore is a short favorite here, but you can shop around and get him a little better than the minus 130 that's depicted.
Lou, how about Fernandez going up against Jalen Turner?
Another underdog I like. Jalen Turner just came back to the UFC after retirement. I wonder where his head's at. He's long, tall, highly athletic, and he can pack some punch. Issue is, Fernandez fights out of Nova União in Brazil, has never been knocked out. And so I think this is going to be a scrappy fight, and the longer Fernandez stays in there, the more discouraged Turner's going to be and may start thinking again about retirement. And so I think Fernandez can be regarded at plus 135 or so as a live dog.
Okay, very good. And seeing Gore, $1.15 at DraftKings right now as well. And that's where we'll go for a lot of his picks here. And you're getting creative here. Tell us about this parlay. This is Ribovitz to finish Barbosa, tied into Mackenzie Dern to beat Robertson. Take it away, Uncle Lou.
Yeah, those are both fights on the main card. Ribovitz is a 10 years younger. There's tremendous advantage to the younger fighter when you get more than 6 years of age difference. And so Ribovitz holds that. Barbosa is on the Mount Rushmore of OGs in the UFC. When you talk about authentic guys like the Diaz brothers, you just have to put him in there. He's fought everybody. The guy's a warrior, but he's 40. And I don't want to say he's spent, but his best days are behind him. Ribovitz going to tear through him like Grant through Richmond. And I think that finish, you still have to pay minus 200. It's no gimme, but that's how Ribovitz wants to win this fight. That's how he's going to win this fight, I believe. And then we take that to the co-main event with Mackenzie Dern. Dern fights a young lady named Robertson from Canada, who's a tough, scrappy little chihuahua backed into a corner. But in every level of mixed martial arts weaponry, she lacks what Dern has. Dern's the better striker, and Dern isn't that great a striker. And Dern is a world-class Brazilian jiu-jitsu artist that's assimilated her game to mixed martial arts. Wherever Robertson tries to take this, she's going to be in too much water. And I think this won't be an easy fight for Dern. It's going to be a typical ladies 115-pound matchup that'll go to decision. But I think Dern will have her way with Robertson if she doesn't submit her.
And Lou, in the co-main event, you like Gary. You think Gary's a live dog?
Well, that's the main event, Moose. And I'll tell you what, there's a story here. Makhachev is now the champion at 170 after having beaten Jack Della Maddalena for the title. And Jack Della Maddalena, you know, beat an undersized Bilal Muhammad for the title. And Jack Della Maddalena is somewhat undersized himself. Makhachev beat him. But before that, fought at 155. And a couple of years ago, 2023, Volkanovski took Makhachev to a decision. Yeah, the Volkanovski that came up to 155 from 145. So now here's Makhachev holding the title at 170. Now he has to face a real 170-pounder. This dude, Gary, he's long on mouth, and I don't like him a bit. However, his fighting style is perfect for an upset in this fight. Who he has faced is absolutely the top razor blades in the division. And even though he lost to Rakhmonov, who's now injured, he made that fight competitive and survived to decision. He will be 4 inches taller than Makhachev. He'll be the more athletic man. And in this fight, he will have to manipulate space and keep Makhachev at distance, which I think he can do. And even when Makhachev reaches the inside position, as strong as he is, I'm not sure if he's going to be able to get Gary down. This is a really, really great matchup for Gary. I advise a small taste of him on the money line at plus 280 or so. More importantly, if you're outside of Nevada and you can get the DraftKings plus 9.5 points at minus 120, that's a three-unit release for me. I rarely release two-unit bets. Ooh. This is a three-unit bet, so I don't want to overstate it. I'd rather understate it, but this is a really, really excellent opportunity for Ian Gary.
I'm trying to also help you out here. Joe Rogan thinks maybe Makhachev could retire after the fight, too. Does that play into it?
Not to me. What Makhachev is trying to do is win this fight and then be carried off on everybody's shoulders as being with John Jones as a GOAT
right.
in the UFC. And if he wins this, I think that that classification fits him. That's how much he's fighting for. But we just saw Ilya Topuria fight for a lot. I'm not saying Makhachev is coming into this fight overconfident like Topuria was, but funny things happen. And this Gary is unusually athletic and deft on his feet. He has no power, and that's why I see this. You see this fight lined at 4.5 over.
Yeah.
That's why I love the 9.5, because I don't believe Makhachev can get him out of there, and I know Gary can't knock him out. And so going to decision, and you're going to give me 9 points, that means – they're going to have to give Makhachev every round to beat me, and I don't think that's how this fight goes.
Okay, excellent breakdown.
Lou, what's the best fight of UFC 330?
I think it's this Makhachev Gary because of the clash of styles. Okay. This is Frazier Ali, where Makhachev, the wrestler, has to get in and clasp on, and Gary cannot let that happen. If it does, he's got to get up and separate. And where this fight takes place, Moose, is going to tell you who's winning the fight.
Great to talk to you, my man. Excellent breakdown as always. Good luck, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Thanks for having me, guys. Keep it up, and good luck, everybody.
There it is. Lou Finicaro at Gamlou on X, and read his breakdowns, VSiN.com. In the Bout Business podcast, one of his favorite bet in the last 2 to 3 years. Available at DraftKings, Gary plus 9.5 in the main event. And an excellent breakdown.
Love
there.
That.
And then how about, you know, the plus 282 with a little sprinkle, as he said. And then getting creative with that parlay, which it was Dern to beat Robertson. That has moved. That's up to 220 now at DraftKings. But, again, tied in to Rybovits to win with any finish as well. So, excellent job from Lou.
And Paulie, you went final. Red Sox 7, 7-0 to the good. So, the over, it goes under, even though that game was 1-0 for a while.
Okay.
Durbin with the big home run late for Boston, 7-0 the final.
Okay. I like you guys behind the glass. Never put Little League World Series on. I don't want to see it. I can't stand it. I despise Little League World Series. I mean,
why do you despise it?
It's a slice of Americana. Number one,
it's
the highlight of these guys' lives. You shouldn't peak when you're 11 or 12. It also dictates puberty. Who hits puberty first as well? And then if a kid's great at 12 or 13, the letdown and your neck of the woods. I hate the Almonte stories, how the parents try to cheat and ruin this as well and live vicariously through their kids also.
Something was off when Danny Almonte was throwing the ball like 90 miles an hour.
Yeah,
something was off.
And a Chinese Taipei. The Chinese Taipei first baseman is 6'5 with a mustache every single year. We have a preseason game to start the card where a team is laying more in the first half than they are for the game next. We kick it off in about an hour and 15 minutes. Packers take on the Steelers at Caesars and Will Hill. Green Bay is laying 3.5 in the first half. They're 3 for the game. It's 2.5 at DraftKings. Love will start And we'll see how long he goes and what he looks like for Green Bay. No Aaron Rodgers for the Steelers. Moose, earlier you said maybe Rudolph could be the odd man out. I don't know if it's going to be Will Howard. I don't know if they're going to carry four quarterbacks or what the plan is. Remember, this Pittsburgh was favored a couple days ago. Green Bay now up to the 3.5, as I mentioned. You have the new coach coming in, a new system with McCarthy. They're throwing in a lot of stuff, installs. This is very difficult, McCarthy said. You can play games with the first four installs. We're adding a second and third down package. Yesterday, we put in a short yardage package. Today, second red zone package. Goal line install package. Thud tempo. Two-minute drill. We're throwing everything at the guys. But I also think it comes down to Packers first half. That's it, and not for the game. Because still, I mean, you got guys fighting for jobs here. That is a pretty good rotation. And again, I don't know how it's going to play out. But after Rodgers, you go Rudolph, Howard, and then Drew Aller.
Yeah, and just kind of, and we'll see. I'm interested to see Aller. Big expectations, big-time recruit when he went to Penn State. You know, had some moments, but ended his career hurt. So we'll see exactly what he is. But he was a guy that was well thought of. I think if he came out two drafts ago, probably would have been a first or a second-round draft choice when you're looking at Drew Aller. So we'll see exactly what he has for the Pittsburgh Steelers here moving forward, Paulie. But I kind of agree with you. We mentioned earlier in the show, agree with your handicap in terms of leaning more Green Bay than Pittsburgh based on everything you're hearing with Pittsburgh, based on the fact that it's a veteran-oriented team. You got to see exactly who's playing. There's going to be camp battles. Who's going to make the final 53? Obviously, when you look at this, sometimes it's more for – these games are more for the back end of the roster than it is for the top end of the roster, trying to get through these games healthy. But see how long Love lasts for the Green Bay Packers. Change there with a new defensive coordinator, Jeff Hafley, now the head coach down in Miami with the Dolphins.
Yep.
I would lean more Green Bay in this one. I agree with you, Paulie, in terms of over the Steelers.
Also at 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific, Bengals all the way up to 7, 6.5 in the first half, 7 for the game. Burrow and the starters are going to give it a go. We know it's Luke Altmaier for the majority of the time for Detroit. Again, no Goff. Bridgewater retired. They just signed Dobbs off the earlier in the week. Dan Campbell and the Lions on a 2-11 straight up run in the preseason as well. Everyone here at VSiN drinking the Bengals Kool-Aid. I love what Al Golden said, though. The defense has looked nothing like the team that was awful the last 2 years. The defense continues to be strong in camp. We have an edge. We got to continue to have that edge. We haven't done anything yet. So encouraging stuff with Cincinnati after they couldn't stop a damn thing the last 2 years. 6.5 first half's a big one. I know Matt Heumann said yesterday we're getting carried away with the number. But again, if it's look at this rotation, though. After Burrow, it's Flacco. Then it's Josh Johnson and then Clifford. So the Bengals should be able to name their score.
Yeah, they should be. I just think it's an uncomfortable number because there's a lot of unknowns. And when we go into it, I mean, that's the big time key. You want to know all the information that's in front of you. There's a lot of variance when you come into it. So, I mean, the Bengals, and they're laying 6.5 in the first half. They might be able to cover that number. And then all of a sudden it gets dicey in the third or fourth quarter. So you see defenses, they play a lot of vanilla. They don't want to go out there and show and put stuff on tape based on what they're to do in the regular season. It's early on in the preseason here as well. So you're going to get a lot of dump off passes, some easy completions. We've seen it, and the trends are where there's a lot of points scored in these games.
Yeah, good point.
To me, it would be the Lions or nothing.
Yep.
I'm not telling you that. I understand why all the heat's coming on and why that number is trickled up for the Cincinnati Bengals, Paulie, but I don't feel comfortable laying 7 in the preseason.
I'm glad you mentioned that. We saw what happened in the Hall of Fame game and all the points. And as Matt Heumann wrote this week at VSiN.com, last year, week one of the preseason, games averaged 45 points a game. And we're seeing some significant movement with these totals, and maybe we get high scoring. I think low scoring in this one. And Dave Tooley made the case for the under at VSiN.com. 37.5 now. It's ticked up a point. Chargers and the Texans. Houston on a 15-3 under run in the preseason, and you're going to see some Trey Lance, who's a guy to have in the preseason if you like the side. I'm not going to talk you off the Chargers side, but I'm with Thule and the under here in that incredible trend with the Texans playing low-scoring preseason games.
Yeah, ugly. I mean, that's what this one's going to be. I mean, it's going to be ugly. I would agree with it. I think you're going to get the under in this one as well. Texans obviously defined by that defense. You look at the Los Angeles Chargers. some people being critical in terms of, and we talked about it yesterday, Paulie, in which, you know, their odds to win the division are actually ahead of the Denver Broncos. Why is that the case? Well, offensive line being a little healthier. You got to see Justin Herbert actually do it. He's better in theory than he has been in reality, especially when it comes to the playoffs when you're looking at Herbert. But he's got all the talent in the world. Now he's got to go out there and put it together in Harbaugh and company. But I agree. I don't think you're going to see a lot of points tonight between L.A. and Houston.
Colts and Patriots. Colts up to 3.
Yeah.
Now, Matt asked you the question, and you both said you're not comfortable doing it, and there's 2.5s out there as well. It's not that you're laying it and you're betting on it. It's Anthony Richardson and Riley Leonard, and that's the bet on here because you got these guys fighting it out for the backup job with the Colts. Shane Steichen said the guy that's most consistent is going to win the job. It's back and forth right now. There's been flashes, but there's work to be done for sure. Danny Dimes has not missed a single snap with the first-team offense and has not taken any days off from practice. It's no May for the Patriots. It's Tommy Cutlets. They're getting ready for the Seahawks again and a team that went to the Super Bowl. You know, why do they care? And I think the Colts get it done here and win and cover. They've also played 7 straight overs on the road and 15-5 overrun in their last 20 preseason games. So I know why you're a little hesitant with Richardson, but it's Richardson and Leonard battling it out for that job, and it's going to be Morton behind Tommy Cutlets in New England.
Yeah, and listen, I think about this, the drop off for Anthony Richardson. We talked about it earlier in the week.
Oh, you know, staggering.
He might have some vision issues, and now he's in a battle with Riley Leonard, a guy that was a top 10 draft choice in the National Football League.
Top five pick. Yeah.
To now be the backup quarterback behind Daniel Jones out there in Indianapolis for the Colts. I know it's the combination of both. I would probably lean DeVito and the Patriots plus the 2.5 if I had to pick a side in it. I don't really particularly like the game when you're looking at the preseason. For Indianapolis, obviously, they're focused in on making sure Jones is healthy, upright, and ready to go for Steichen in the regular season. Same thing to be said about Drake May. You're not going to see him tonight for the New England Patriots. But DeVito could play. I mean, I think you saw that with the Giants. There is a limitation to what he can do. I think, but he has shown himself that he can be a backup quarterback in the National Football League. And if pressed to start for a short amount of time, he can move that offense. So I'd probably side New England plus the 2.5. But look at the life away. I mean, Anthony Richardson right now, he's trying to keep his NFL life alive here. And a guy that was a top 5 pick, as you mentioned, Paulie.
We're on the Titans in the late game. Hope you got it early. When it was $1.40 on the money line, the Titans are up to 6, 250 on the money line. They're laying 4.5 in the first half. You have Levis and Trubisky fighting it out to back up Cam Ward. Salah, the new coach, 10-3 career in the preseason. Long hair, don't care for the Niners. It should be run, punt, and just get out of there. 2 years ago, the 49ers canceled joint practice sessions with the Saints. Because the time they got to him, they had 23 players hurt. By the end of practice late last week, they were without 20 players on their 90-man roster. Just get out of there and don't get any more people hurt. A coach who likes to go for it and win. The new coach angle here with Tennessee, which is blindly 60% ATS the last 5 years. Everything you want with the Niners. If you got to the party early and you got a great number, you maybe come back, take 6. With the Niners and try to middle it, but I'm all about Tennessee here, but we are getting carried away. 6 for the game, 4.5 in the first half, 39.5 the total in the late game.
Yeah, it's a lot. It really is. But, you know, Paulie, everything that you just mentioned, I mean, Salah is basically Vince Lombardi in the preseason.
Yeah,
I mean, his team's won the preseason. Not necessarily. I mean, he is great. I mean, they respond. He wants to win. The game plan's great. You get to the regular season. And as we saw with the Jets, not so much. And Tennessee's hoping for a different result from Salah in the regular season this year for the Titans. So, but I would agree. Everything points to Tennessee, and that's why you've seen the number move from 4.5 to 6. I'd even be more comfortable. I'm comfortable laying the 6 with the Tennessee Titans, even with the low total number sitting there, in the high 30s.
Out here, 5 o'clock, Raiders up to 3. No Carson Beck. Brissett and the starters going only a series, according to LaFleur. And a good quarterback rotation for the Raiders. They're up to 3 in that game, and 41.5 the total. 6 games tonight. Some of the best betting opportunities of the year start with the NFL preseason. Sign up for VSiN Pro today. Get both our NFL and college football betting guides, team previews, power ratings, proven betting systems. Best bets from every host, every guest. Start today, just $9.99. Get a full year and save 50% with a VSiN Pro annual subscription. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe now. We won't stop there. Can the World Cup fever carry over? Lower League soccer starts this weekend. Hardcore breakdown with Steve Wiss, the meat man, next.